Hello everyone, thanks for coming in so early. We are going to have another couple of minutes before we can settle for technical issues here for the upload of the slides, and then we will start. Thank you. Good morning again, everybody. I hear we are ready to go, so if you can take your seats, there are plenty of them around, so we can start. Welcome to the Address Supporting Organization Address Council public meeting and workshop. My name is Filiz Yılmaz. I'm the vice chair of the ASOAC, which is the abbreviation of what I've just said. We are the body at the ICANN fora dealing with the IP addresses in general. Some people like to call it the N at the ICANN. And there are five regional internet registries in the world, you may know, managing the registration of IP addresses and AS numbers. The delegation of these resources are done based on policies developed by their associated regional communities. These are bottom-up policy development processes. An address supporting organization consists three people from each of these regions, again, supported by these communities. So we are coming from those bottom-up policy development processes and elected mechanisms. We will facilitate this session to highlight recent discussions and activities that these regional internet registries and the communities have been busy with. The aim of this session is to have it interactively, so after each agenda point we will have some discussion time, and our presenters have been primed that they will keep their presentation to a limit, right? No surprise there. The agenda details are published on the website, the session website, but please don't be confused. We shuffled them around a little. What you see at the session site is not exactly what's going to happen here. So first we will start with how to participate in this RAR policy development process, and this will be presented by our chair, ASOAC chair, Louis Lee. Then we will continue with the CRIS team activity from Nurani Nimpuno. She's the vice chair of the CRIS team, and this has been the main activity of the RAR committees in the recent times, and it's very highlighted. We want to give an update of this work to this date, and we will conclude with the RAR IANA operational update by Axel Pavlik. He's the NRO chair at the moment, and if there are any other business, we think that we will still have time at the end, towards the end of the 90 minutes. One last thing I've been noticing before we start, we are also proud that at the moment, at this session setup, there is exact perfect gender balance. I've been noted, so thank you very much. Luli, can we start with you, please?
Thank you so much, Phyllis. Good morning, everyone. I am Louis Lee, and this is Louis Lee's hat. All right. Welcome to the session. So we'll jump right in, but just a little bit... Whoa, I'm sorry. Yes, all done! No. Right, green button, forward, technology. So... we're just going to cover a little bit about what the ASO in relationship with ICANN, number of resources, and then part of the and then go into the policy development process. The ASO and specifically the ASO Address Council have several duties. We advise the ICANN board and community of IP addresses and AS number topics. We also appoint two ICANN board members. And along with that, we do appoint members and other members to other working groups and participate in those activities that way. Okay, number of resources. What are they? So this is a definition posted up on our website, but you can think of number of resources as a credit card system. For instance, you have a card with a set of numbers. You might not even care what the numbers specifically are, but what you do care about that number is that it is unique. It gives you some rights. It lets you use those numbers to tell a merchant, I will pay you if you charge my purchase against this set of numbers. To get these numbers from the credit card company, you fill out a form, you make a request, you show that you need this, and they'll evaluate that. And hopefully you'll get a credit card number from that. So in much the same way, an IP address is a unique identifier for you and your equipment on the internet. There's also another set of numbers called autonomous system numbers. These numbers identify an IP network, a group of IP addresses that you are controlling, you have administrative control over. You tell the rest of the world, if you want to reach these addresses, come to this network. So that's and that's done through announcing it through the autonomous system number. Now, how do you get these IP addresses and ASNs? Well, one way you can do that is to first check with your internet, a regional internet registry. Each registry has a community that would develop its own policies to govern how the requests come in, how they're evaluated, and determine whether you should receive an address or not. If you do not meet these criteria, you can go to your LIR, your local internet registry, or your ISP. Oftentimes, as you're setting up a network, getting connected, you would be offered an IP address directly from the ISP anyway. So have a look to see if that's large enough block of addresses for you, and if it's not big enough, the ISP will typically give you a larger block or tell you how you can get your own directly from the ISP. And in some regions, there are NIRs, which are national internet registries, which could also help you get addresses through the RIR system. So I briefly described the regional internet registries, and you can see on this map how the regions are divided up. If you're familiar with the CCNSO or the ICANN regions, they are broken up fairly similarly, but not identically. For instance, in the Aran region, you see that it is primarily made up on the map as United States and Canada, but you might not be able to see easily on this map that there are many Caribbean countries also covered. I believe we're on the order of 34 economies, somewhere on that order for at least the Aran region. And then you see in RIPE covers Europe and Russia, and APNIC would cover the Asia region and also Australia. And you see that the LACNIC region would cover not only South America, but also parts of North America that consider themselves part of Latin Americans. And of course, not to shortchange AFRINIC, they cover the African continent and some economies in the Indian Ocean. Okay, so how do you qualify for IP addresses from the regional internet registries? Well, one way to see if you meet the requirements is to look at the policy manuals at each region. If you are a multi-regional entity, you have a network that covers not just North America, but also somewhere in Europe or across other regions, there is a comparative policy overview that you can have a look at. You can reach that through the NRO website, which is nro.net. And under the Policies tab, you'll see the link to the RIR Comparative Policy Overview. I've given you a first page here with some table of contents items. So what if you don't qualify? Of course, ask your ISP, because typically smaller blocks of addresses, your ISP should be willing to give to you. But if you're asking for a large block that the ISP is unwilling to give you or work with you to get, then and you don't meet the policies as you see on the policy manual, you could really change the policy to meet your needs. I would first urge you to talk with the RIR staff to make sure that you're not misreading the policy manual, or maybe it could be interpreted in a way that actually meets your needs already. So that could help you right there. But you do have the option to change the policy, and that is how the policy manual is built. We have an infographic that covers the policy lifecycle. This policy lifecycle describes how the policies are developed within each region, and then if it's a global policy, will work up to the ICANN level. And a global policy is defined as one that covers the IP address and AS assignments between another entity like IANA and the RIRs. But even so, your policy your requests would typically fall under the regional policy requirements. So, if to do so, you would participate in an open, transparent, and bottom-up process. These policy proposals would be submitted within your region, and the process is the same across regions in that they are they have community input. There is time for debate and discussion, a call for consensus, and a last call, then implementation. They vary from region to region a little bit with timelines, how often that the policies are evaluated, things of that nature. But typically, they are fairly similar. And this is a brief snapshot of the current policies that are under discussion or recently worked on, whether they are ratified or abandoned. If you would like, this should be posted up on the website soon with all the titles. But the summary is that there are about 30 policies with 17 under discussion, one at last call, 8 that are ratified, so that they would soon to be implemented, and 4 of them were abandoned. These policies cover topics such as AS numbers, DNS, specifically the INADDR, which is reverse DNS, IPv4, V6, the process itself, region of use and transfers. Regions of use of and transfers are covering topics that relate to how you use the addresses within your region, if you're allowed to use it within region, also outside the region, how much of it, 50%, most of it, all of it, things of that nature. And these are questions that the community themselves are grappling with. Transfers have to do with the transfer of resources either within the region, between members, or between members that are in cross regions. So just some highlights. RIPE is soon to implement an inter-RIR V4 transfer policy. Aaron and APNIC already has such a policy in place, which allow the members within the Aaron and APNIC region to transfer resources between each other. So after RIPE implements the V4 transfer policies, then it will enable the transfer between RIPE, Aaron, and APNIC amongst the three. And in addition, there is a inter-RIR proposal over at APNIC. Region of use proposals at EFRNIC and Aaron. Why? Because V4 has run out. And so do you allow an entity to request address space that is from those regions, but use them in a different region? And if you would like to see the full listing of the proposals, here are the links to each of the region's proposals. And a final note about the participation. You can attend the policy meetings in person. There are 14 around the world, or you may also attend via remote participation means. In addition, you may do so via mailing lists. The links are posted. And final note about that is that you do not have to reside in the region to participate in the process. If you have an idea that works, or if you have want to talk about ideas that other people have, please feel free to do so. It's just a matter of signing up for the mailing list and keep a lookout on what's going on those lists. So at this point, I'll take questions.
Thank you, Louis. Any questions you would like to raise to Louis Lee about PDPs or the address supporting organization, our structures, where we sit at the ICANN fora? No?
Nothing for me.
Okay, I just want to make a comment before we move to the next speaker, Nurani, here. I think it's very important to note that in many cases, in almost all PDP processes that are in place at the regional internet registries, they've been there for a very long time, and they are proof that they are working with the recent activity that we see. They are well established processes, and the very minimal part of it, I think, is important to highlight. You do not even have to be present at a meeting in person. You do not even have to travel. It is very significant that the main participation is your active participation is depending on how much you want to participate. It is attached to an email address and a mailing list most of the time. The level is totally how much you want to be out there. It is depending on the individual's choice. Is that rightly so to be said?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, now, we turn to Nurani. Nurani is the vice chair of the CRISP team. CRISP team, you may have heard it. It is one of the circles that has been shown in many slides so far, feeding into the IANA transition process, and they are an integral part of that process. So she will talk about how it was formed, what happened so far, and where they are at now. Thank you, Nurani.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Nurani Nipuno, and I'm the vice chair for CRISP team, the team responsible for developing the proposal for the numbers community in the IANA transition process. And thank you very much for being here in the morning, the early morning session, and I know a lot of you have been here for a week already, so I know I appreciate the effort of coming here. So thank you very much for that lovely introduction. I think Louis really gave a very good and comprehensive overview of the RIR structure, and so I'm not going to go into that, but I'm just going to emphasize the parts that actually both Felice and Louis already talked about, that the RIR communities are open, bottom-up, inclusive, and transparent. And really, in the numbers community, that they're not just words that don't mean anything. That's actually something that the members of the RIR communities live every day. So, the IANA stewardship process in the numbers community was initiated in each of the five RIR regions. So, as soon as the announcement came out from the NTIA, the RIRs individually started the discussions with their communities. And so throughout the whole year, last year, input and feedback was gathered in each region. And it was then decided to put together a team to represent each regions and to try to reconcile all consolidate all the input that we'd received. And it was decided to have a team of 15 members, so two community representatives and one RIR staff. So I'm one of the community representatives for the RIPE region. So what did the process look like? Well, as I said, the discussions really started on a regional level first, and it was then up to the CRISP team to gather all that feedback and to discuss it all and to reach consensus on the text that then finally ended up in the proposal. It was very intense. It was very intense work over a very short space of time, where we worked over Christmas and New Year's and to finally deliver the proposal on the 15th of January this year. As you know, the CRISP team is only one of three operational communities that were identified to have a stake in this transition. So the other two operational communities are the protocol parameters, which is the IETF. They put together a group called the IANA plan. The CWG stewardship group, which is the names community. And then as part of the names communities process, they also created a separate track, which was called the CCWG, which was the group that was dealing with, well, finding solutions for accountability issues in the ICANN structure. The three groups have worked very independently so far, with the CRISP team and the IETF delivering their proposal on the 15th of January, but where the names community very early on flagged that they needed a little bit more time. They produced a second draft of that text in May, and they've now actually submitted their third and final draft. So the CWG is now going through the approval process through the supporting organisations, and they will then deliver their final proposal to the ICG, which is the IANA Transition Coordination Group. I will cover this a little bit more as we proceed, but given that we realise that we're getting very close to the submission, the final submission deadline from the ICG to the NTIA via the ICANN board, we found that it was very important for us to very early on work with the other communities to see, to try to make sure that we didn't create any conflicts or that we could reconcile any potential conflicts between the proposals. So what does the numbers community proposal look like? Well, it's a document that's available on the NRO website, but I'll walk you through some of the very key elements. So the IANA function stability and reliability was really one of the criteria defined by the NTIA in starting this process, that it was important to continue to provide these services by the IANA to the community at large in a very stable and robust manner. This was also really a key component in the proposal by the numbers community. And as a result of that, the numbers community said very clearly that they are happy with ICANN as the provider of the IANA services. So the proposal suggests to stay with ICANN as the provider of the IANA numbering services. However, it was also important to put in provisions for an orderly transition to another operator should that need arise sometime in the future. But that is not a priority at this point in time at all for the numbers community. So another component was for the RARs to establish a service level agreement with the IANA operator. So, in essence, replacing the role of the NTIA in overseeing the IANA numbering services, the RIRs would instead establish an SLA with ICANN, in this case the IANA numbering services operator. It's a bit of a mouthful, but for us it was important to really identify the part of the IANA services that applies to our community. The numbers community has since long many established bottom-up processes and structures, it was felt that we could, in the review process, maybe add an extra element of community participation. So after discussions with the various communities, there were a few different models discussed. We agreed that a review committee that was community-based could assist the RIRs in reviewing the service levels. So that was another element that we said we set out the framework for it in the proposal, but we said that it should be up to each RIR community to establish a review committee or come up with a model that works for them. And then there was also an element with intellectual property rights, where it was felt that the intellectual property rights, the trademark IANA and the domain name IANA.org, should stay with the community. So especially in the ICANN context, of course, there are a lot of discussions centering around accountability. And it's a question that we also get a lot on the numbers proposal. So how do the IANA accountability structures look like? So in the above chart, you'll see the NTIA having a contractual accountability with ICANN, and that the IANA numbering operations have organizational accountability within ICANN. So what we're essentially proposing is to replace the NTIA with the five RIRs, with the help of this community-based review committee to provide community advice. And apart from that, so the five RIRs and ICANN have contractual accountability, and then there's still organisational accountability between the IAN operator and ICANN. So as I said, the role of this review committee is to provide advice to the RIRs in reviewing the service levels and really to make sure that the community's voice is heard directly in this process. And it was agreed that it should be made up of community representatives, equal representation from each service region, and the RIR community would be driving the member selection of this. And I'm also very happy to say that after having asked the RIRs to propose a review committee charter, they have this week published such a charter. So we welcome feedback on that charter. So this is just a graphical representation showing that there's equal representation in each region. And as you can see, all the review committee members are very happy with that setup. Okay, so the IANA service level agreement. We had discussions very early on about what should go in the service level agreement between the RIRs and the IANA operator. And it was felt that as community representatives, we are not lawyers, and it was not our task to write this contract. We're not the contractual party, that's the RIRs and ICANN. So instead of trying to draft a contract, a service level agreement, we said, well, what we'll do is that we'll put together a set of principles that we expect the RIRs to follow when developing this SLA. So just to highlight a few things, the obligation to issue reports on transparency and accountability was felt important. Obviously, security performance and audit requirements. There needs to be a review mechanism of the IANA operation, and there needs to be mechanisms to handle if there are problems with that. And it also handles some of the intellectual property rights and the rights over data. So it was also very encouraging, although we worked under a very intense short period, it was very encouraging to see explicit support for the proposal by the numbers, or actually the wider community, once both throughout the process but also once the proposal had been submitted. And for us that was very important to see, to get that confirmation from the community that we'd met their needs. All the RIRs have also since then had meetings in their regions, and in all those regions they've all been explicit or implied, but in most cases explicit support expressed publicly for the proposal. We were also very encouraged to see that Steve Crocker at the last ICANN meeting said that the ICANN board can see nothing fundamental in the proposal that they have a problem with. So that's very encouraging moving forward, given that this service level agreement will have to be established with ICANN. So this is just a very quick overview of the community engagement. I'm not going to go through it, but it's just so that you know where to go and what to where you can get the proposal. I'll just mention that we were very conscious of listening to the community's input. So each and every comment or piece of feedback that we received on the proposal was received, acknowledged, and documented in a spreadsheet that we made public, just to make sure that it was clear to everyone that the process was transparent and that everyone felt that they were heard. So, as for the coordination with the other operational communities, I mentioned that, of course, we have three very separate proposals, but all these three proposals will be consolidated into one as the ICG puts forward that to the ICANN board and to the NTIA. So one of the things that we identified very early was that the ITF and the numbers, the CRISP proposal, had different text on the intellectual property rights. But we established very early that there were that didn't mean that there was a conflict between the two proposals. In the CRISP proposal, we mentioned the ITF Trust as a potential holder of the intellectual property rights, the IANA trademark and the IANA.org domain, and we reached out to the ITF community after we'd submitted our proposal, and they expressed publicly that they were willing to host that, so that was very encouraging. We didn't know at that point what the names community was going to do, But we felt that it was important that we communicate early to them what was already on the table. If you read the current text in the names community, it potentially offers a different solution. But and because of this, the ICG has requested the CWG to resolve this potential conflict. Both in informal talks with the CWG chairs, but also in the public session, I think the day before yesterday, the CWG session, we were very happy to hear that they stated that the text that is in there is not agreed text. It's in square brackets, so to speak. And it, essentially, the CWG doesn't have a position on IPRs at the moment, and that they're also committed to work towards a reconciled solution. So we're very happy with that, and we feel very encouraged that that can be easily resolved. So where do we go from here? Well, as I said, we've already started working with the other IANA communities. The names community is waiting for their proposal to go through its the approval of the supporting organisations and advisory councils, and it will then be submitted to the ICG. They have a slightly different model where they suggest a post-transition IANA, another acronym, PTI, which is a legally separate but wholly owned subsidiary of ICANN. The RARs are currently looking at this, and they've come up with some statements about how we how we think we can work with this. We don't really see an issue with it. It's just a matter of seeing what works for the numbers community. We also note that the names community's proposal has a separate review process and a separate contract. So that really means that it allows all the three communities to have their separate processes, the separate reviews, processes and structures, and a separate contract. So we see no conflict there, and that's very encouraging. Okay, so one of the things that we have brought up in various places is that we believe that parallel processing is essential in this as we move forward. And it's not just because it's a bunch of engineers and it's attractive to them, but really we think it's the pragmatic way to move forward. Given that we have a limited amount of time and we are all committed to this transition, and really the various processes are not dependent on each other. So we feel that a lot of these things can be done independently, and the RARs and the numbers community is already moving forward with a lot of these things. So I mentioned that the ICG is now looking at all the three proposals, and we'll be reviewing them and consult with the community as they move forward to a consolidated proposal. We are in the process of resolving these potential IPR inconsistencies. The RARs have produced a first draft on the SLA and had a comprehensive round of feedback on that, and they're in the process of publishing a second draft. It was also encouraging to see that the ICANN board has made their comments on the SLA, and from what we can see, there's really nothing, there are no stumbling blocks there. So we hope that that really means that as the RIRs enter into negotiation with ICANN, there may not be many issues that need to be resolved. And as I said, the community-based review committee, the charter for that has been published. We welcome feedback on that. And then we're looking to finalise that. So what's still to come for us? Well, clearly the negotiation with ICANN over the SLA terms. We find that there are a lot of, we find ourselves in the middle of a lot of speculation about, of political nature, of what various parties in the process may or may not accept or may not think. And really for the CRISP team and for the community, our priority is that we are committed to the success of this transition. We're committed to the transparency throughout the discussion process, which is why we asked ICANN and other parties to commit to submit their comments in public. And we respect the principles agreed in the proposal, because that is what our community has given us, and that is what we need to respect. So finally, we are confident that the numbers community proposal reflects the needs of the community, but also that they meet it meets the set needs of the NTIA, the requirements set out in the announcement by the NTIA. I don't know if you all heard Larry Strickling this meeting, really emphasising that the work of the remaining communities now should be focusing on looking at the requirements, making sure their proposal meets the requirement, and we feel that confident that ours does. The numbers community has signalled that we are ready. We are moving forward to put together as much as we can before the transition, so that when the transition happens, it happens in a very smooth way. And we're very optimistic about the future steps. So you'll find more information on this page. And with that, thank you very much, and I welcome any comments you may have.
No comments? Okay. I guess it's crystal clear from the CRISP team. I have a question, and in fact, maybe to my own colleagues here, we have representatives to other working groups and that are linked to the whole process as well. One of them is the accountability working group, cross-community for the ICANN accountability, that is somehow linked. Is there any extra comments you want to provide? We have four representatives to that community working group. Yes, Athena, if you would like to.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Athena Fraguli. I'm the legal counsel of RIPE NCC. Together with Izumi Okutani, Fiona Asonga, and Jorge Villa, we are the ASO representatives of the CCWG for ICANN accountability. So we are following this process, and we participate in this process from the very beginning of the formation of this group. We wanted to make sure that any proposal that comes out of this group will not be a delaying factor to the IANA's chairship transition, and also that it will not interfere with our numbers community matters with regards to ICANN. So we are confident right now to say that the draft proposal that has been published does not affect the CRISP proposal in time-wise. CRISP proposal has no prerequisites that are a matter of business of the CCWG. Having said that, there have been concerns from the numbers community that the proposals, some of the proposals may cause a delay to the whole IANA chairship transition. And during the public consultation of the first draft proposal of the CCWG, there has been a request by the numbers community to review the proposals against this transition timelines. Other than that, the numbers community feels That's the input we got from the numbers community. They feel confident with the already established relationship we have with ICANN. That also includes appealing mechanisms that are described in already existing agreements and MOUs with ICANN. And it was strongly suggested that any proposal should not interfere with our relationship, and in particular, that appealing mechanisms that are suggested by this group should have the number matters out of their scope. I think these are the two main messages we got from the numbers community, and we're going to make sure that they are conveyed to the group. Thank you.
Thank you, Atina. Any further comments? I just want to make an observation myself, if I may, for the 2 minutes that I can give to myself. There's a lot being said here about these processes, and you know, this is a colossal moment in many ways at the moment for internet in general, and how operations are linked to policy development processes and etc. I think one thing I would like to note is as much as a number size of the transition may be quite straightforward in a lot of ways, the way we see it. There is also a little bit to say that these very established processes that we've been using for over all decades in different regional internet registries, I think contributed to the success of this. We were very able, in my opinion, that as communities to move ahead and take the job and put them in the already established processes and then produce a product out of it, rather than first trying to build a process, discuss the process details, and then put it in the system and work through the goal. So I just want to make a note of that, because I think this should be a good example for future work that may come ahead. We never know what's going to happen in the future, but I think it's good to make a note of that, at least for myself as a mental note. Thank you. Of course, Narani.
Thank you. I'm not going to vehemently disagree with you, but thank you for that comment, because I think that we sometimes forget to communicate that, and I think the reason we worked very hard on this proposal, but in some ways it was an easy task. And it was made easy simply because for several reasons. It was made easy because we felt that the numbers community, they have these structures put in place already. We did not have to resolve all the world's accountability issues, because we felt that trust in the RIR communities. As someone who's participated in the RIR community for a very long time, I had no, there were no red flags that popped up in my head about, for example, establishing a service level agreement between the RIRs and the IAN operator. But the other is that I think because the RIR structures have matured so over a long time, there were processes and mechanisms we could follow. We didn't have to set up a new working group, and we didn't have to make a big call for participants. We didn't have to say, hey, does anyone know about the IANA numbering functions? Does anyone want to give us input on that? We had this wealth of knowledge in all these communities, and we had people who had been participating in RIR policy making for a long time. We had just simple things like we established a new global mailing list, but in the regions we had mailing lists where we could start these discussions. We had meetings where these people came together already. So really, if we hadn't had that, then we would have had to do the work of the last 20 years now in 6 months. And we didn't have to do that. So all the CRISP team had to do was to listen to the community, the diverse range of opinions, as you always get, and then to find a consensus position. So that was actually very, from a personal perspective, it was a very rewarding process. It was an exhausting process, but rewarding. Thanks.
And I guess we are all thankful for the hard work you put in. Yes, we have a comment there. Could you please tell us your name and come with your question? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. My name is Shion Ojedeji. I'm from Nigeria. I'm the co-chair, one of the chairs of the Africa Policy Development Working Group, and I'm also a member of the CWG. But I'm speaking of my personal self right now. First, I want to congratulate the CRISP team for doing a good job, especially during the week of, the period of December. It was quite hectic, and I never knew we were going to, the CRISP was going to pull that up before the deadline, but they did. So I think it's a good thing to appreciate that. Just a couple of...
Sorry, could you speak a little bit closer to the microphone? We're struggling to hear you. Thanks. Perfect, thank you.
Good. But I don't need to start all over again, right? Okay. A couple of comments. The first is based on the presentation that has been made and based on the proposal of the numbers community, it seems very clear that the numbers community is not willing to actually engage PTI directly. I'd like to get that confirmation. The other clarification is in relation to the IPR. Does numbers community actually require that as a precondition to transition? That is there a requirement that there must be a transfer of the trademarks before the transition can happen? My third question is in relation to the lifespan of CRISP itself. So now you've submitted the proposal, ICG is looking at it. When is CRISP going to last throughout the implementation phase as well, or once there is a full proposal from ICG that will consider CRISP's process, CRISP group is done and dissolved? Thank you.
Okay, I'll try to answer your questions. The way, from what I heard, I could hear two questions, one about the IPR issue and the other about the role of the CRISP team. And as it stands now...
There are three questions.
Sorry?
There are three. The first one you missed is the one in relation to the contract. That is, you're not willing to... I want to get that confirmation based on what was presented, that the numbers community is not on the table to consider engaging PTI directly based on the name's proposal, which actually proposes to move.
Right. So your question is if the numbers community is reconsidering signing a contract with ICANN and instead signing directly with the PTI.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you. So I'll start with your first question about who to sign with. So it was actually a question that the numbers community got from the ICG, or one of the considerations. And I'd say, and the RIRs have actually publicly stated that they are looking to sign with ICANN, because this is what was in the proposal and this is what the community has expressed. There has also been a statement made by the APNIC board, so the Regional Internet Registry for Asia Pacific, which was then also supported by the other five RIRs, saying that they are looking at the PTI and also that if if the RIRs were to sign with ICANN, there should be a provision in the SLA about the PTI as there's a subcontracting relationship there. I'll let Axel add anything if he wants to before I move on to the other two questions. Thank you.
Not that much to add there, really. The design idea behind the whole CRISP proposal is to keep it very, very simple, to keep it very similar to what we already have in place for the last 20 years, and to make any transition as much a non-event as possible. So in that sense, I think it's all fairly straightforward. We want to present a contract, an SLA, that is flexible enough to be signed tomorrow, if we could, if we had it ready, so that it would be a belt and suspenders type of solution. The NTAA contract would still be in place, and we would have the next level underneath it already. So in time, when the NTAA contract goes away, we would have another contract that would take over and would not change much. So as simple as possible. So signing with ICANN is the obvious thing. PTI isn't there yet. And should it pop up, then there should be clauses in the contract that makes it easy to assign that contract to PTI or subcontract, something like that. But at this time, it's the ICANN.
Okay, and I'm happy to respond to your other two questions. And apologies, I should note also that the chair of CRISP, Izumi Okutani, is also sitting here. Okay, so your second question was about the IPRs. And if you read the CRISP proposal, it does state that this should happen as part of the transition. If you look at the IETF proposal, it doesn't necessarily say that. So there are no conflicts between the two, but if you look at the CRISP proposal, it does say that it should happen. As we move into this final phase and as the ICG needs to consolidate the proposals, at this point we have not received any questions to revise our proposal, so we stick with our proposal. If we were to get questions from the ICG or from the other communities, if the NAMES community would offer another solution, of course we would take that back to the community. But it's not for the CRISP team to change or for the RIRs to change anything that the community has agreed on. So I hope that answers your question about the IPRs. And then finally about the role of the CRISP team, your question is very timely because we are currently looking at the charter of the CRISP team and whether or not we need to revise that to take this into the final stages of the transition. From our perspective, we were set up by the community to represent the community in this process. Once that process is over, there is no role for the CRISP team. So we're only here to shepherd our proposal and to explain it to the community and to go back to our community if there are changes needed. But once that's submitted, I don't see a role for the CRISP team. Thank you.
Thank you for the questions and comments. So I believe we can move on with the next agenda point. Axel, are you good to go to talk about the recent IANA interaction with the RIRs? Thank you.
Sure, I'm awake.
And you have coffee.
And I had coffee. Right. So we've heard from Louis earlier on about the policy process and how to participate in this and how to receive numbers that you need from the RIRs. Also, we've heard about IANA transition. It's a very exciting topic. I want to give you a bit of an update on what's actually the status of the RIRs in terms of numbering and also how much interaction operationally we have with IANA. because that's at the centerpiece of all this. So this is the Ceterum Censeo type of slide. We are running out of IPv4 address space, and this is actually out of date. I woke up this morning and had breakfast and checked my Facebook site, and I saw that Arin has 0.04/8 left. So we're hitting the wall, but that's no news really. There are a number of regionally different policies looking at depletion and what to do there, and I won't go into much detail. The presentation is available online, of course. Basically, the idea is in many areas that we reserve a little bit of address space for new entrants to the market, that future generations will still have a little bit of IPv4 left to use in parallel with IPv6. Transfers. As IPv4 has become a rather scarce resource these days, it does not come as a big surprise that transfers are happening quite a lot, certainly within the ARIA service regions from member to member. Some members need address space, others maybe not so much anymore because they have maybe gone forward to IPv6 a bit more than others. So transfers are happening, which is fine. The ARIA's main priority and interest in this is that we know about it. We run the registries, or one global registry together, and this registry must be up to date and correct. So information about transfers should be available to the ARIA's. We don't want things to happen in darkened back rooms. That's the reason we put as little as possible obstacle in the way of this. You see a couple of tick marks here. This basically indicates in which ARIA's service region transfer policies are available for inter-ARIA transfer also. It's quite interesting, of course, as you've seen that various ARIAs have different levels of IPv4 address space left. So obviously there's an interest of getting some of that address space transferred between regions. And there are all sorts of discussions. The latest one come to the table is RIPE-NCC implementing its transfer policy there. Now, the amount of interaction we have with IANA is relatively low. Basically, we're talking about allocations here based on global policies. This one is a table that shows the latest allocation of IPv4 addresses, 500,000 each, to the ARIAs. This is based on the post-exhaustion IPv4 allocation policy. Twice a year, every ARIA gets about a fifth of what's left in IANA. Occasionally, IANA receives a little bit of address space back in terms of space that has been recovered, and the idea is that this space is distributed among the ARIAs equally. Then we, from time to time, get allocations of autonomous system numbers, also fairly straightforward, a couple of interactions there per year, not very much. This is a nice slide that shows you the absolute numbers of V4 allocations, V6 allocations, and ASN allocations over the last 5 years or so, and you see it's not a lot. This is even... Well, more interesting, this is a slide that gives you the activity of IANA for the various communities, the various IANA customers. And, again, for the last 5 years, there is a little bit of green at the bottom of the barrel there, and that's us. The amount of interactions that we have with IANA is really, really, really low compared to all the other activities that are ongoing there. You see, over the last year or so, quite some activity in the namespace. I think that's mostly the new GTLDs. And on top of it, sort of hanging there a little bit in this lovely curve, is the activity for the protocol parameters for the IETF. So actually, if IANA remembers us, and they do, I'm quite happy about that, because they don't have daily interactions with us. Generally, the ARIAs have statistics available on the NRO website. daily updated, and so the big status report updated quarterly. Please do go and have a look at that. It's quite interesting to see what's happening. Also, some engineering stuff is going on occasionally with Diana and ourselves. This one is a slide on ADAP, basically, who is replacement, newer generation, good stuff. Basically, we are working on a process to add, maintain the ADAP interests there in the on the IANA level. And that actually is all I have to say this morning, Dai. Thank you very much, and happy to answer any questions.
I don't see anyone jumping on the mics, Axel. But I'll ask Carlos if there are any remote participation. No? Okay, well, thank you very much. That brings us to the end of our set agenda. If there is any other business or any other comments that you would like to raise, we are here, as well as our colleagues sitting over here, the whole member of the Address Council here are here for with us today. So if you have any questions, not tied to the agenda points, but any other questions, we still have, I believe, 17 minutes access to this room. So we may, please.
Thank you. I'm Toshio Tachibana. I'm a regular participant of the registry event. So regarding the lead slide to the RIR holds the event 14th per year on your slide. And we have five regional internet registry. And each RIR twice per year per event. And 14 is a what event additional to that?
Sorry, I did screw up on my addition. There's actually more like 12 a year in that in each region, each of the five regions, there are two public policy meetings. And then at the Aran region, there are also two public policy consultation sessions held at the NANOC. So at Aran, there are actually 4 days where you can be doing this. So my addition was incorrect.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you then for joining us early in the morning. 15 minutes earlier for coffee. Here we go. Thanks again, and talk to you later.